Welcome. Let's join best-selling author Fred Kuhn as he interviews our next guest expert.
Well, welcome, Lisa and Susan. We have lots of topics in this mini-series. So, Lisa, we'll start with you. Let's start with some background on sexual harassment. What does a manager or a business owner need to know?
Well, thank you, Fred. There's a few basic things that I think are crucial for any manager or business owner. And first of all, it's a common belief that sexual harassment is actually about sex. And I would challenge that. I would say that sexual harassment is more about someone in a position of power having control over an employee or even a candidate. So we have Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is the law that made discrimination illegal based on a variety of traits. So in addition to race and ethnicity and religion, we have gender. And what most people don't realize is, of course, that covers both men and women equally. So the gender title, the component of Title VII, is the law that protects individuals against sexual harassment. And it wasn't until 1976, about 12 years after the original law was passed, that a district court first recognized sexual harassment as a form of gender discrimination. And in that case, it was what we see as the traditional sexual harassment, where you see sexual advances by a male supervisor towards a female employee. And then it was another 10 years later after that, in 1986, that the Supreme Court finally recognized sexual harassment as illegal under Title VII. So what it covers is the federal law covers employers with 15 or more employees. However, and very importantly, state and local laws also exist that add additional protection. And many states and municipalities cover employers with less than 15 employees. So for example, in Arizona, employers with one or more employees are covered. And by the way, it also includes organizations such as employment agencies and labor organizations. It also covers in communications and advertisements, so how you're seeking candidates. Another example would be California. They cover employers with five or more employees. In New York, it's employers with four or more employees. And then there's many municipalities, such as New York City and San Francisco, Phoenix, Chicago, et cetera, who also have sexual harassment laws. One last thing I wanted to point out here is that the states and the municipalities might also have additional requirements in addition to the no harassment or no discrimination laws, whereas there might be a requirement of the states such as California, Maine, and Connecticut for those employers to conduct and track sexual harassment training at certain intervals.
Well, thank you very much, Lisa. Susan, you have a little different perspective on this, having been a practitioner in a law firm in New York, and you've done everything, you know, litigator, trainer, negotiator, advisor, etc. What is your take on this question about what does a manager or owner need to know?
Well, it's very important, I think, and Lisa touched on it already, to check your local jurisdiction, regardless of what it is. Especially if, for instance, you're a public sector employee or board of education or school district, because there are different laws that apply in different jurisdictions for different types of agencies. So not only is it private, but it's public. And not only that, but if your company extends out into the world at all, extraterritorial, they call it, you've got to check to see whether or not Title VII is actually following the employee, or whether or not you have to abide by the law of the land that you're in. It's kind of a complicated situation, and I cannot defend somebody unless that person has followed the law. The first thing the court's going to want to know is whether or not, for instance, you published the policy, whether or not there's something on a bulletin board.
Sure.
You know, something giving knowledge of the fact that you do know what the law is.
Do the laws require that you actually conduct training on a regular basis on the laws?
Lisa, do you want to address that?
Sure. So some states and municipalities require training, and that includes Connecticut and California and Maine, and that you not only conduct the training, but that you document it and you can provide proof of that training. And some municipalities do the same. And some of them require training separately for both leaders or managers and employees. That's where Susan made an excellent point, that it's crucial that you understand the requirements for your municipality that you operate in, and many organizations operate in many municipalities, and also the type of employer you are. As she pointed out, if you're government or public or private, that could certainly government versus a private employer, it has different laws and rules of the land that they have to follow.
Well, that leads me to my next question. We understand legally everybody has to live within the law, of course, and you have to practice it in different ways in different states. So this leads to the big question, what constitutes sexual harassment? Lisa?
Sure. So sexual harassment is defined as an unwelcome sexual advance or a request for a sexual favor or any other verbal or physical conduct of a sexual nature when there's one of two conditions, both conditions, or either. Employment status or benefits are contingent upon the acceptance of that conduct. So what we mean here is that if you refuse or don't accept or reject or complain about the conduct, that's part of what constitutes sexual harassment versus it's welcome. And then the other one is, does the behavior intend to or evenly inadvertently have the effect of unreasonably interfering with that employee's work performance or their ability to do their job? Or does it create an intimidating, hostile, or offensive work environment? And what's important for employers to realize is that harassment can emanate from anyone the employee has contact with. So naturally, it can come from their boss. We all know about that. But it can also come from another manager in the company that they don't report to. It could come from a colleague. It could come from a vendor, a customer or a client, and believe it or not, even someone that that person comes into contact with in the general public.
Let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. What are some sexual harassment acts? I'd like to know. I mean, the obvious is obvious. But today in the marketplace, you see so much on television and hear so much about if they say something this way or they say something this way or they look at you differently. I mean, what constitutes true sexual harassment?
I can certainly share some of those with you, and I'm going to add a caveat that different district and circuit courts, and I know Susan will speak to this, are going to interpret it slightly different. So keep in mind that sexual harassment actually emanates from gender discrimination, and therefore the actual law of sexual harassment emanates from court decisions. So different districts will define it slightly differently, but keeping in mind that the Supreme Court made a definition in 86, we follow that, but again, since then, there's been additional interpretations on top of that. So some examples would be, to your point, the very obvious. So that is when somebody in charge asks somebody for any kind of a romantic or sexual relationship, and acceptance of that sexual or romantic relationship leads to either a punishment or a reward. So a punishment, you're not going to get promoted, you're going to get fired, I'm not going to give you the good assignments, or a reward, I'm going to promote you, I'm going to give you the assignments, you get to keep your job. So that's the obvious one. But the less obvious ones that I think many employers and employees are not aware of are things like hostile work environment, where say an employee, let's just say they work at a coffee shop, and every day or frequently a particular customer comes in and comments on the way they look or makes them uncomfortable with comments that are specific about their gender or about sex, asks them continuously on a date even though they've rejected it. That is sexual harassment if it is severe or frequent. And it has the effect of threatening or humiliating or making it so they can't effectively do their job. Another example I'll give you is the colleague. So there's the group of colleagues where, let's just say, they're primarily male, and that's the traditional, but it could be that they're primarily female. And the person who is in the minority, the male or female in the minority, is left out of things, or statements are made about that minority gender that makes them feel uncomfortable, like, it's an all-female workplace with maybe one or two men, and the women complain about their husbands and talk about, well, you know, all men are. Men always do this. I can't stand when men do that. If that's severe enough or pervasive enough, meaning ongoing, that could absolutely constitute a hostile work environment.
I remember decades ago, show my age, it was nothing to say to a lady if you liked her outfit, hey, you really look great outfit today. Today, that's considered sexual harassment, correct?
It depends, and I'm going to ask Susan to add to this, but I would say if somebody said that to me once or anybody once, and there is no intention behind it, so there is no connection to any employment, ongoing employment or employment benefit, no, it would not be sexual harassment. But if it was said on a daily basis and it made me uncomfortable and unable to effectively do my job, or if it was said with some type of an attachment, whereas you expected something in exchange, then yes, it could absolutely constitute sexual harassment. Susan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think it's an easy answer, Fred. The courts are going to look at the totality of the circumstances, everything that's going on. You know, what is the environment like? Does this happen all the time? And you don't have to show necessarily an injury, a physical injury or a psychological injury. It's just something that might be making it very difficult for a person to do their job. For instance, let's assume you're an affirmative action person and the other individual you have to work for or with, you know, sends you love letters all the time. And they're sending to you and they never say anything to you. It's going to make it very uncomfortable, whether this is a male-female situation or the opposite way of going, for that individual to go into that person's office. They're going to be expecting some kind of behavior which is inappropriate, and they're not going to want to go into that office, therefore they can't do the job. And there's been no touching involved. There's been no even conversation involved. A court may find that actionable because of the totality of the circumstances. And the courts a lot of times look at the, and probably you've heard this term before, the reasonable woman reaction to it as opposed to just the reasonable person thing. Indeed, the courts have changed a lot of the mores that are applied based on what's going on in a particular year or based on the fact that there are women now on the Supreme Court who are looking at a lot of these issues in a different way than when it was an all-male court because people look at things differently. Now, if, for instance, you send an employee to work down in South America, the mores down there are that possibly, and I'm not trying to put people into a box here. Let's assume that it's more common for people to make comments about how somebody looks or acts or dresses. But you've sent an American woman down into that environment. You will be responsible for the way she reacts to that and if it makes her uncomfortable, even if it is a comfortable situation for the people down in the country you sent her to. So depending on the circumstances, depending on how often something happens, depending upon the workplace, the courts may look at things differently.
Well, those are two really interesting and very informational areas that I'm sure will develop over time. I'd like to thank you, Lisa, and I'd like to thank you, Susan, for your great comments on what constitutes sexual harassment and some background on that subject. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much as well, Fred. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for visiting with us. We welcome your comments and suggestions and look forward to having you join us soon at Workplace Strategies.